Brother Mark Rowell, our pastor, he spoke on the book of Ruth last weekend, and it's just how these things go. That was what I was reading. So before we go to the book of Ruth, I wanted to read something out of Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, verse 34 says, "And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Obviously, Jesus is drawing a parallel to the cross that Jesus himself carried to his death. Take up his cross. That's a phrase that we say a lot. We hear a lot that not just in the primitive Baptists. Many people of Christian faith use that phrase in many various ways, but what kind of image does that draw? What kind of parallel does that draw? What thought does that bring to your mind? Does it just mean to follow Christ? When Jesus picked up his cross, it was to take it to his death. He picked it up. It was the redeeming work that he was supposed to do on the cross, but ultimately he was going to die on that cross. Let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. It doesn't sound like there's a lot in it for us on face value, right? For whosoever shall save his life will save his life shall lose it. I don't want to lose my life. I like my life. I like it the way it is. Will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? It's kind of how the book of Ruth starts. Especially near the end of the first chapter, which I think we'll go there. The story of Ruth starts with a man named Elimelech. Now, if I butcher these names, I am so sorry. I'm doing my best. Elimelech, I believe that's his name. There's a man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi, and they had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. I think that's how you say it. Mahlon and Chilion. And there was a famine in Israel, and so they left. They left to go to a nearby country called Moab. They left to go to a nearby country called Moab so they could have, harvest and, food. And while they were there in this land called Moab, their sons married two women. And you have to understand about Moab. Moab was they did not worship the God of Abraham. They worshiped others. They worshiped another God. And so now into this Israelite family, are two people that are not Israelites. And as it so happens, Elimelech died, and they stayed for another 10 years, and the two sons died. And so now we have Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. In verse 6, it says, "Then she, Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread." So the famine was over with in Israel. They could go home. "Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, Go home, go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me." So there's a few things that we can infer in this, that Naomi had a wonderful relationship with her daughters-in-law, that this family was a good family unit. Elimelech was had a good relationship, and then when he passed on, these two sons and their mother and their wives had a good family. Because it says that, especially Orpah, the one that does leave, she doesn't, she hesitates, you know. It says that in verse 9, the Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? That's how it worked at the time. If your husband died, you married his brother. And she had no more sons to give. Would ye tarry for them till they were grown? Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and left, but Ruth clave unto her. So they had a good relationship. They loved one another. Orpah saw the sense of it, and she left. But Ruth said in verse 16, entreat me not to leave thee. What does it mean to join the church? What does it, I mean, other than, what is baptism really? I mean, there's the symbology of it, which is the watery grave, which it emulates the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It shows that. It is a promise, though. When you join the church, what you're essentially saying is, I don't want to leave this place. I don't want to go. I have seen something here that is beautiful and is wonderful, and I don't want to go. What did this mean for Ruth? In many ways, it meant that she was taking up her cross and following her mother-in-law back home. She didn't know what was going to be coming her way. She didn't know these people. She didn't know this way of life except what she had been shown from her family. She didn't know this. For all she knew, she was walking into her death. Now, she had reasonable assurity that she was not. But she didn't know. Entreat me not to leave thee. That is what you're saying when you take up your cross and follow Jesus Christ. Entreat me not. I am not going to go or return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. For thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. She was a foreigner. She had no lineage to belong in that land. She didn't belong. But the love that she had for her mother-in-law, for that family, and the love that that mother-in-law had for her. I will not leave you. This is my family. This is my home. I have chosen to be with you. Thy God, my God. When you walk into a church, when you walk into the front of that church and you say, I want a place here among you, you are saying, I want your God to be my God. I want this place to be my home. I want this to be my spiritual family. Because Naomi had shown love to Ruth. Had shown a great love to her, a love that clearly she felt was superior to what she could have had back home. She was free from Naomi. She had the freedom by Naomi to go back home, to go to her parents, and essentially, because she had no children of herself, essentially to pretend like the whole thing had never happened. But what she found was not something that she was willing to leave. She walked into that family and she would not walk out. She would not. She chose not. She chose to take up that family. In the same way that we take up the cross when we decide to follow the Lord, when we decide to join the church, she took up that cross. The rest of the story of Ruth is the story of redemption for this family. It is a story of, honestly, it is the story of the law itself. And how Jesus, in many ways, how Jesus fulfilled that law for our justification. Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also. If aught but death part thee and me, that is what you're saying when you submit yourself to the church. When you submit yourself to the church, if aught but death part thee and me. And so the two went until they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, "Is this Naomi?" You're about to find out why. And she said unto them, "Call me not Naomi, call me Mara." The name Naomi means pleasantness. The name Mara means bitterness. "For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me." I've seen this before. When you haven't seen somebody in a long time, and you see that they've aged. Especially if they've gone through something. You know, I think we've seen that where people will age more quickly. I've seen that in my family. Someone gets sick, and then all of a sudden, the aging starts happening very, very quickly. Very quickly. They could see this on Naomi. That's why she said, "Call me Mara. I'm as bitter as I look." I'm as bitter as I look. Now, they left their home to find a place where they could physically eat. But what they also left, and this is what happens when someone leaves the church. When someone leaves the church, what happens? They start aging spiritually. As much as the physical aging showed on her, this bitterness showed, what happens? It's so intoxicating to think about leaving the church. My Sundays are free. I get to sleep in another day or do something else. I can potentially make more money. I can do all sorts of other things. And that's why they left their home, because they felt like their physical needs were not going to be met in the land that they were at. And so they went somewhere else. When someone leaves a church, they're saying, "I don't feel like my spiritual needs are being met in this place, so I'm going to go figure it out somewhere else." And especially if you decide that you're not going to go anywhere else to get your spiritual needs met. Like, it's not just about moving from one city to another and finding a new church. This is about leaving the church. And so she left. She left the church, and what she found within herself was bitterness. Yes, things had happened. But wouldn't she have rather her husband and her sons, if they were to die in the exact same time that they were to die, wouldn't she have rather been home for that to happen? These physical things, this is, life does not stop. The ugliness of life does not stop. Even when you choose the church, it does not stop. What it does is it gives you a place where you can have rest for your souls. You can have rest here that you can't have anywhere else. You're going to walk out these doors today. You're going to walk back into the world that is full of sin, that is full of anger, that is full of bitterness. And in a week from today, you're going to walk back into this place and you're going to find rest for your souls. And this is what Naomi was depriving herself of when she and her husband and her family left. They deprived themselves of a place to have rest. They were homeless for a decade. Homeless. What they found, they found blessings in spite of it. They found two wonderful daughters-in-law, one of which stayed and was the instrument of that family's redemption. The Lord will have mercy on whom He will have mercy. Even when we do something bad decision, like leaving the church, He does not abandon us. But when we abandon our walk in Him, what we find is bitterness. That's what we find. That's what she found. But Ruth didn't see that in Naomi. What Ruth saw in this family, even though they were removed from their home, what they brought with them was more of a home to Ruth than she had ever had. You know, Brother Mark spoke last weekend that it would have been, it would be a stretch to say that she had been married to her husband for 10 years and her husband had never taught her any of the ways of Israel. Any of the ways of Jude, any of the ways that they had when they were back home. Ruth had an idea through exposure to this family of what their God was like, of what this was. And not only that, she felt the love from them because of it. So we have two different people in two different stages of their life. One who has essentially left her place of safety, her place of rest. Another has found it. And so, after some time, the famine has been lifted from home, and so they return. Entreat me not to leave you. Whatever this is, I want this. What she knew in her heart, she knew it. I will not leave you. I love you. I love what you have brought into my life. She loved it so much that she said, there is nothing that's going to separate you from me except for death. How powerful is that? It just shows how potent the children of God are when we show the love of Christ. How potent, how powerful, that in the midst of her bitterness, she was still showing the love of her God. How powerful is that? Does it not show exactly who we are through Him? Who we are to others through Him? So they returned. Chapter 2. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. I'm fairly certain about this. If you keep reading, you'll find out that I don't think Naomi knew exactly where Ruth was going to glean. Because when she finds out, it's a revelation to her. So, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. So she was getting the leftovers. And her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz. It just so happened that that she went into Boaz's field, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Remember, we've already talked about if your husband dies and there's a brother, you marry the brother. Well, I mean, same thing, cousin, whatever, whoever the next kinsman is, right? That's the idea. Verse 4, and behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they said unto him, the Lord bless thee. So he's just saying hello. How's everybody? Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. So servant, I don't know why he says it twice, but he says, this Moab girl is from Moab. He wants to make sure this is, in a very strange way, he's basically saying this is the foreigner that Naomi brought back. She's a foreigner. Okay? It was an important point to make at the time. Verse 7, and she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, except for when she took a break in the house. She tarried a little in the house. So now Boaz goes and talks to Ruth. And said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go into the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. Why? Why is he being nice to her? He sees her, and he basically, he asks his secondhand man, who is this? And he tells her. He tells him. And then he said, You stay in this field. And when you're thirsty, go and drink with what the men are drinking. And verse 10, then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. Now, before we get into the weeds on this, we're not talking about eternal salvation. We're not drawing a parallel from that. But there is an element of justification present in this. Justification is the declaration of righteousness, the declaration of that which was made right. Ruth, because of her actions, was declared righteous by Boaz. Her actions declared her to be righteous. Jesus' actions declared us to be righteous. Her actions, in so many ways, saved her family. This is an eternal principle being applied in a timely way. And it goes on. And Boaz answered and said unto her, well, it hath been fully shown to me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. Because she took up her cross and followed her mother-in-law. She is now reaping a blessing from these actions. We can be blessed because of our actions. Don't think that just because our eternity is taken care of, that there aren't things that we can do to be blessed of by the Lord. The Lord recompense thy work and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Do you trust under his wings? She left her. I mean, can you imagine? There was an element of fear with that. There was an element of fear when she left her home. She left everything she knew. But she didn't just, she didn't hesitate about it when she made her mind up. When she made that decision, she wasn't, oh, well, okay, I guess we'll go, you know, every step of the way, had one eye over her shoulder looking back. No, her promise was, entreat me not to leave thee. I'm going to stay with you until death. I will treat you like my mother for the rest of my life. There is justification in that choice, in that decision. And it was declared to be so by Boaz, by a man who had authority and power to do something about it. He did. He had authority and he had power as the next kinsman to see her work and to redeem it. He saw that. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given of thee, of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaiden, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens. We're going to jump really quick to the end of chapter 3 of Romans. Romans 3 and 29. Is he the God of the Jews only? Is he not also of the Gentiles? Yes, of the Gentiles also. Seeing it is one God which shall justify the circumcision, the Jews, by faith, and the uncircumcision, the Gentiles, through faith. Do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid. Yea, we establish the law. The law was not broken when Boaz was talking to a foreigner, because he wasn't talking to her as a foreigner. He was talking to her as the daughter-in-law of Naomi, which is how God views his children. We have these natural ties. We do. And this was a big deal back in this time. It was a big deal that there were natural Jews. You know, we had the Pharisees, the Sadducees. We had all sorts of Jews, different classes, different groups. And then we had the Gentiles. And we know exactly how many of those Jews felt about those Gentiles. And that is not how Jesus felt. That was not his perspective. He saw his children. He saw the children of the Father. That's what he saw. When he saw a Gentile, he said, in the same way that I have saved the Jews, I have saved you too. Every child of God has been saved in this manner, through this perspective. And it didn't break the law, it established the law. It established it in the same way, in the exact same way. Much the same. Ruth 2 and 10. She fell on her face and bowed herself in the ground. Why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath been fully shown to me all that you have done. Verse 15. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, reproach her not. Let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, so she may glean, and rebuke her not. So she stayed and she gleaned. In verse 19, her mother-in-law said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee." And she showed her mother. This is where the story kind of takes it's a light bulb moment for Naomi. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, "The man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz." And immediately Naomi knew what that meant. Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord." Does she sound bitter anymore? "Who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead?" And Naomi said unto her, "The man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen, and he likes you." Our next kinsman, he has given you a kindness. And Ruth the Moabite said, "He said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest." And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, and they meet thee not in any other field." So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So now they're eating really well. They're eating really well. You see where the Lord has blessed this choice of Ruth. The Lord has blessed this choice, has justified it, has declared it. This was, especially with the lack of information we have about the family during that 10 years time, when they were all, the father dies, and then they live for 10 years, and then the two brothers die. We just don't know a whole lot. We can infer a few things, but we don't know a whole lot. We don't really know what went into Ruth's thought process, for why she made this promise to Naomi. But because she made it, the blessings that she is reaping from this leap of faith have been so far and beyond anything that she could have imagined for herself. If anyone deserves not to be blessed, it's me. It's me. I'll say that. I feel like that. You know, we're talking about Uncle David. One of my favorite things that Uncle David says is, "If you knew my life, you wouldn't let me preach for you." But that just shows the blessings of God. We are all fallen sinners. And in a moment, an act of faith, a sinner in an act of faith, one small moment, it changed her whole life. It brought a blessing to her that would continue through her days because she chose to be this, "Thy God, my God. I choose this." And it just keeps going. 3 and 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor." So Naomi gets, she gives some instructions to Ruth of what she should do next. "Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in, uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do." More strange instructions. More leaps of faith. He's going to have dinner tonight. And when he goes and lays down, I want you to uncover his feet and lay down at his feet. This is a somewhat intimate scene. You know, that she would do such a thing. It's very forward as well. It's very presumptuous. But she felt Naomi felt that it was in her right to do so. And she believed that Boaz would give her instructions upon doing so. In verse 6, "And she went down into the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid, because he had fallen asleep, and he wakes up for a moment, and he sees a strange woman." He doesn't identify her immediately. All he sees is a woman laying at his feet. "That the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, 'Who art thou?' And she answered, 'I am Ruth, thine handmaiden. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaiden, for thou art a near kinsman.' And he said," he could have said, "Go away. No, I don't want anything to do with this." But Boaz knew the law. He knew it. He also knew how he felt about Ruth. He knew how he felt about her and what she had done. And he knew that he was a near kinsman. And so his response was, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich." He sees her virtue. He still sees in this moment this woman lying at his feet, keeping her promise, the promise that she had made: "Thy God, my God. This family, my family. Where you go, where you stay, where you lodge." She is keeping this act of faith, keeping it. And he sees that. "And now, 11, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I." So there's a problem. There's a stumbling block. There's a bump in the road, as you would say, because I think Boaz is starting to get excited about this prospect. This idea that he could be married to this woman, that he doesn't just feel an obligation towards, that he feels affection towards, that he has admiration for. But Boaz, knowing the law and keeping the law exactly as it was, knew that there was a nearer kinsman. And so he was going to follow the law regardless of how he felt. And he left it in the hands of the Lord. "There is a kinsman nearer than I," verse 13, "tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning." She lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor." And he also, he said, "Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley. I assume that's a lot. 6 measures of barley, laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, "These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, 'Go not empty unto thy mother-in-law.'" So he is helping her keep her promise to her mother-in-law. Then she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day." So Brother Sonny and I were reading a little bit in Deuteronomy yesterday about the law and about husband dies, brother. And there's things that happen. There was a process. And so chapter 4 opens up with the process, following the law. And then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, he just calls him such a one. He doesn't even give him a name. Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, tell me, that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And he said, unfortunately for Boaz, I will redeem it. So now we hit the worst case scenario. Okay, so Boaz is excited, Naomi's excited, Ruth is excited, everybody's excited. But this near kinsman, the nearer kinsman said, you know what, I will redeem it. So it looks like this whole thing's just going to evaporate, right? This all of the blessings that have led up to this just look like they're about to poof, go away. Then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. So you're not just getting this from Naomi, you're getting this from Ruth. And guess what? Ruth isn't one of us, lineage-wise. She comes from this pagan country next door. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. He did not want to bring a foreigner into his household. And so he decided that he was going to pass on it. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. In the face of what looked like game over, as the kids would say, it was game over. It was, this blessing has run its course, and we've met the end of it. You know, you'll still be blessed. You know, your house will be redeemed under this man's name, not under mine. And there would still have been, the house still would have been technically redeemed under that manner. But it wouldn't have been Boaz. It wouldn't have been. And somehow, and in some way, because this man heard that she was a foreigner, he passed. How many times has that happened in your life? In my life, when it seems like you've hit a brick wall, when, okay, this just isn't going to work out. And then against every last bit of odds, it works out. Because when God purposes something, it will come to pass. Whether we understand its means or not. Which is exactly what Jesus Christ did on the cross. Do you fully understand what exactly he did to redeem us? Do you fully understand exactly the torment, the pain, the anguish, the sacrifice that he put himself through on the cross, every last bit of it, every sin of every child of God? Do you understand that? Do you understand what he heaped upon himself to accomplish what he did? It shouldn't have worked. And by any natural means, it wouldn't have. But because God Almighty purposed it to happen, and because God Almighty was the one on that cross, it did happen. It happened for you. It happened for every child of God. It happened for all of us. There was no stumbling block that was going to cause it to not happen. Jesus Christ fulfilled his work in spite of the natural stumbling blocks that seemed to be in the way. And in the same way, God blessed this situation to resolve the way that it did. Because there was something that should have happened This man, this unidentified man, should have redeemed this, but he didn't. His loss. He didn't. And it resolved exactly the way that God purposed it to resolve. I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe. This was in Deuteronomy. We read that. If you want to read Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 5, on down a few verses, there you go. There's some homework for you. It's interesting, to say the least, how they did that kind of stuff. Therefore, the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Kilian's and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren. And from the gate of this place, you are witnesses this day. This family went off to a foreign land, and by all rights, that family should have just died off. Name and everything. Name, property, all of it. It should have all been gone. It should have all been gone. And by the promise of a foreigner who had nothing to do with that nation, who had the leave to go back to her own people through an act of faith upon experience of a love that she did not have beforehand. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. I will stay with you until I die. And all of this unfolds. It all unfolds. This family was redeemed when it shouldn't have been, when it should have died off, when it should have been gone, by all natural understanding, but that was not the will of God Almighty. That was not His purpose for that family. And by this promise that one little foreign girl made, faith was shown. Promise was fulfilled. 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, who's not bitter anymore, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman. The Lord hath not left you. He has not left you without a kinsman to redeem you. That kinsman being Jesus Christ. Christ has redeemed you when you were lost, when you had no we should have been left in the dust by all reason, by our own sin. But by our Redeemer, we were brought into the fold. We were saved. Not only to an eternal heaven, but to have the ability to have a relationship with Jesus Christ in this life. And the woman said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel, that he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thy old age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. Naomi took the child and became its nurse. And that son's name was Obed, who was the father of Jesse, who was the father of David. Which means Jesus Christ, who is of David's lineage, has foreign blood in him. You ever thought about that? Jesus was not a full-blood Jew. By lineage, there was Moab blood in him. This is a story of redemption, a story of justification. A story that God is not limited by our natural means. And I thank you for your kind attention.
There's one more that I'd like tonight with the church. The doors